Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, my name is Jess Phillips, and this is Yours Sincerely. I've always been a prolific letter writer, both the good and bad kind, and know the power of putting words on paper. So in this podcast, I want to give my guests a chance to celebrate three people that mean the world to them. Someone they love, someone who's no longer around, and someone who doesn't realise how significant a role they've played in their lives. And when we've heard more about each person, they'll reveal how they would sign off each letter. Izzy City is a comedian, actress and writer. She has acted in TV shows such as Peep Show, Damned and Shameless. She currently hosts the podcast The Things We Do for Love, and this year she released her debut novel Jane is Trying. Today I'm excited to talk to her about the letters she would send to three people who mean the world to her. Hello Izzy, how are you?
Hello, I'm very good. I've just had an apple.
Okay, good.
I can't complain.
Keep the doctor away.
I only like apples these days cut up, and my daughter's the same. But I just ate one, because that takes time, and I only had 5 minutes. I've just eaten one in 5 minutes off the core.
Fruit that is cut up is considerably better than fruit that isn't. I would be, like, really, really healthy and svelte if somebody made me an enormous fruit platter every morning. And if I make it myself, it doesn't taste good. But when somebody presents you with, like, a fruit plate... So delicious.
Yeah, I know, but there needs to be more of it, I think.
Just around and about, just fruit plates on street corners.
Like in greasy spoons, there should be the option of a fruit plate.
Why is there no drive-through healthy food? Like, I'm often on the road and like going about my business and I have to go through the McDonald's drive-through. Why is there no healthy food to drive through?
I know, it's when I gig, and I used to do a lot of gigs outside London and be driving back, getting back at like 2 and 3 in the morning, my diet was just burgers and Haribo.
Well, as somebody who literally like goes to and from every week to and I'm constantly on the road, I just eat absolute rubbish.
I've never thought that about MPs. Of course, it doesn't have to be 2 in the morning, does it? It's the fact that you're away from home.
So are you much of a letter writer?
Yes. I was thinking about in the past boyfriends I used to write. We used to write to each other. I had one boyfriend when I first went to college and he lived in London and I lived in Guildford. And also, previously to that, I lived in Matlock, where I'm from, and he lived in London. So we were always apart. And we used to write to each other probably 2 or 3 times a week. And I just remember that feeling of seeing his writing on the envelope. And we used to make each other quizzes. And you'd have to, like, tick a box and stuff. Like,
that's just, so lovely.
It was lovely. I know. And then when I moved out of my house in the first year, I left, you know, his letters to me by accident in a drawer and I'd never been able to get them back. But in a way, I think it's good not to kind of reread that old stuff. I have the memories of just how much fun we had writing and that feeling, as I say, yeah, before you open the envelope, it's like, what's in there? And I think technology's changed things a bit. I really miss, though, that thing of actually putting pen to paper.
Yeah, I didn't realise that this was going to be the case, but recently with all the people I've spoken to, I've started a hate campaign against voice notes. It's a campaign currently that has one member and that is me, but I literally hate WhatsApp voice notes. Anything more than a second long, but I feel that WhatsApp voice notes have replaced the letter.
Yeah, it's like, what is a voice note? So as you'll see, because... at the end of one of my letters, I mentioned voice notes. There's only one person in my life who I like getting voice notes from, who leaves me them a lot. And I like leaving her them. Actually, there are two, but that's it. That's really it. I don't know what they are. It's like they're trying to invent a new genre of communication, but...
On the train sometimes, I see people having a conversation where they leave a voice note and then the other person leaves a voice note. It's just like, maybe have a conversation? I mean, admittedly, the train, the signal isn't great, but just ring them. If you're going to say something, then they're going to say something. Woman in the nail salon the other day was doing it next to me. And A, I don't want to hear the other side of the conversation. I didn't much want to hear.
What was she playing?
She was playing the voice note and then recording her own voice note.
No.
I mean, not good.
No. I think that's just weird because I think they always end up being long, don't they?
Well, the only ones I will tolerate and these ones I like is in the six women who I'm very, very close to in our friendship group. When something is funny, everybody just records a voice note of them pissing themselves, basically. And that is it. And they last 1 minute. Not 1 second, like, it's just like you go, like, laughing, basically. That's funny.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good, because that's silly. But they're not saying, now I'm going to talk for 5 minutes about the kitchen extension and whether or not I should get these tiles. What I hate is when there's loads of questions within it, and then you can't remember. I genuinely have had to make notes before when I'm listening to a voice, because I'm like, I'm not going to address, because I'm quite thorough about, I'm like, right, they've asked 8 questions, I've got to answer them all, so I will actually make, and it's like,
you'd be
what's
a
happening?
Dreadful politician, is he? Absolutely dreadful. You
for so many reasons.
You failed at the very first hurdle. Don't answer the questions. Answer the question you wanted to answer. So
many weak spots.
So many. So do you have any letters from anybody like eminent?
No, I'm going to answer honestly. I genuinely haven't got a letter from anyone eminent. It's now an unfulfilled ambition. But as you get older, you have less idols, I think, don't you? So it'd have to be someone really special now. Whereas I think if you'd asked me when I was 14, I'd be like, all of Take That, all of New Kids on the Block. Like, there would have been so much choice. Whereas now a letter from Joey McIntyre could plop onto the welcome mat and I'd be like,
whatever.
Oh, yeah, whatever.
Oh, Joey.
Oh, Joey. No, actually, I would like that. If he's listening.
What's he up to?
Take it back.
What's he up to now?
Oh, I Googled them the other day because I was talking about them on another podcast. That's my mission to resurrect New Kids on the Block. A really funny podcast about first crushes with Margaret Cable and Smith, which I didn't mean to plug, but I just thought I had to explain what it was. We were talking about New Kids on the Block for ages. And I made a note, not a voice note, to myself to Google them. And I didn't, because I love Googling people from the 90s. Do you? I've been... like Neighbours and Home and Away, all the casts when we were growing up, look on IMDb. They're doing, honestly, some of them are doing stuff that you just wouldn't believe now. But a lot of the music people have gone into management. So, yeah, that's boring. You want them to be like a farmer in a remote village in Wales or something, having moved from the bright lights of New York.
I feel like we should know more about what No Kids on the Block are doing. Isn't like one of them was a Wahlberg.
Yeah, so Wahlberg.
Johnny, was it
yeah,
Johnny?
Yeah, Mark Wahlberg. I think now he is still in the industry in some capacity, but I don't know about the others.
Do you know what? I'm going to try and write to them and get them to send us a letter. That is my mission. I'm going to do it and see if I can get them to say, obviously I will not use parliamentary paper because that would be against the rules, but I'm going to write to them and try and get one of New Kids on the Block. I mean, Jerry was the classic, but you know, I feel like I was a bit more of a Jordan fan myself.
Well, Jordan was great. Jordan was like the kind of, if it was like a spider diagram, he was kind of in the centre, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was the main one, if we're honest.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Jerry was the one everybody had on their wall in my memory of this era. Right, we're going to try and get a letter from New Kids on the Block. I have got a brilliant letter, actually, that I've never even mentioned, and I don't know where it is, and I will have to find this. But somebody once put my husband's name down to go on Britain's Got Talent and, like, signed him up without his knowledge to Britain's Got Talent. This was, like, long, long, long before I was ever a member of Parliament or anything. Signed him up to Britain's Got Talent, and we got this letter saying Tom's, like, Turkish Delight show, like, he was, like, knife-throwing a sort of Turkish-themed show. And it was inviting us to go to the Britain's Got Talent. And we actually looked it up, like, should we go? And then we're like, no, there's going to be a massive queue. We're not waiting in a queue for a gag. It would be funny. But I still have that letter somewhere from Britain's Got Talent inviting my husband to come and do some sort of Turkish cabaret show.
Stuff like that is great. You've got to keep it. I remember when I first graduated and I was living with other actors in none of us had agents. We're all really struggling, doing lots and lots of jobs. And I used to work all day in a call centre, then do comedy gigs at night. I used to work as a cleaner in an office on other nights. And I was always sending out letters to agents to try and get an agent. I sent out 50 a week. This is before people were really using the internet. And we used to get all these rejection letters through the door. And you'd know if your CV and photo had been returned, because it'd be heavier. I could judge by the sound it made as it hit the mat whether or not it was... Well, I mean, yeah, there were always rejections, let's face it, but sometimes I didn't even return the photo. And we used to put the best rejection letters up on the kitchen notice board because we were all getting them. And it was real. And we used to write, like, horrible things about the agents, and it really made us feel better because we were like, we wouldn't want to go with you anyway, knowing full well that if they rang and said we do want to take you on, we'd be like, yes, please.
That is absolutely brilliant. I do a similar thing with, like, really vicious, not the, like, sort of I'm gonna kill you letters that I get, but like people who are just really cross are just writing endless reams. Like, we read them out and in the office and put them up on the wall. People who are like, you know, women like you, that sort of thing. There's something nice about, like, you know, trying to take comfort and own the bad letters that we receive.
Yeah, and you own it in a different way from when stuff's written about you online. Like, I don't really ever look below the line anymore, as it were, like if stuff of mine's on YouTube and all that. But I did used to when I was a newer act, and obviously you'll always find horrible stuff, won't you? And you can't really own it in the same way when it's on a screen, because you don't want to reply either as yourself going, oh, that's not very nice, or like pretending
sock
to
puppet,
be someone. Yeah, exactly. But you don't want to print it off, and it's just not the same. Why have you bought more paper again?
Yeah. Print off. There's reams of abuse on there about me. Print it off. Whack it on the wall. Yeah, no, you don't. But you're right. There is something. Also, I think that when somebody's gone to the bother of writing it down, putting a stamp on it, I feel like, you know, that's far more effort than just spewing hatred online. So there's a certain element of that I quite like. So we're going to go through three letters of people who mean, well, one thing or another to you. And the first thing is just the person who means the world to you. So who would your first letter be to?
Well, I feel like this is a really hard choice. And I listened to Reverend Kate Botley's episode, and I felt like she had a similar quandary in that you want to sort of choose, like, all your friends, but you have to be more specific. And I felt like a bit like, we're not married, but we are going to get married. And as I get older, and I'm now 43, it becomes less and less of an issue to have bridesmaids, because I'm like, am I going to end up getting married when I'm like 75 and still be like, I promised you in 1993 that you could be my bridesmaid? But choosing this person felt a bit like, ooh, what if my other mates listen to it and be like, why haven't you chosen me? So I thought quite hard. This person isn't by any means my only friend, but she's someone who's moved away recently. I feel like our friendship hasn't changed, and I worried it would, because we both lived in London for a long time. She's moved up to Glasgow. And I'd say our friendship has actually got stronger since she's moved away, which sounds bizarre, but I think perhaps we make more of an effort to contact each other. She's the person I can stomach voice messages from and actually do quite enjoy communicating in that way, which is really lucky, because she is a big fan of it. And she's the one who taught me that you don't have to... I mean, I'm now giving tips for leaving voice messages, which is not what I want to do. I don't want to encourage anyone to do it, but you don't have to hold your finger on the button the whole time. Did you know that? If you hold it, if you push the button down on the screen for like 3 seconds, then slide your finger up.
Oh, yeah. I always think I do it by accident and I get really confused. And I'm like, oh, my God, stop it, stop it. And I don't know what that thing is.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's basically you have to tell it you want to record for a long time by moving your finger up.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, gosh.
So anyway, she, yeah.
What's her name? Her.
Josie. Yeah.
So
and it's Josie Long, who you might know.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I did my first gig with her in probably... God, like maybe 2003, and she'd been going for ages because she's been going since she was about 9.
Yeah. I remember when, you know, back when I still loved Jordan from NKOTB.
Yeah, so when we first gigged together, I just loved... I felt like she just exuded positivity and joy and a kind of pure, I don't know, curiosity about life and a kind of a real purity in some way, like a kind of childlike quality, I suppose. And I just threw my arms around her when she came off, but she didn't know me. I think she was a bit like, what are you doing? And I was like, hi. I just felt like really kind of like, God, I really want to hug you. I think you're amazing. We've lived together in Edinburgh lots of times when we've done the festival and been through a lot, you know, met each other's boyfriends. And, you know, like now I look back, now we're both settled down with blokes and kind of go, gosh, you know, I nearly married that person and I was with that guy for ages and blah, blah, blah. And she is kind of by my side all the time and she knows. So we've got that real shared history. And I think you can have other people, can't you, that you've got that shared history with that you still don't feel that close to. So it's not just that we've been friends for a long time. It's also that I think she really, really knows me and she really listens and she's just so kind.
And why she moved to Glasgow? Just change of pace.
She's always really loved Scotland.
It's a nice place.
Yeah, it is. And she's loved Glasgow always in particular. And for years just sort of said, oh, I might move to Glasgow. And I was really like, kind of, don't move to Glasgow. Like, and then I was like, come on, Izzy. She actually really wants to move. Like, you can't make her stay in London. And then she did it. And it's really working out for them. So, yeah. I'm really bad with technology. I get really frustrated with it. I'm like an old person who also doesn't want to learn because my mum really does want to learn. She's better than me and she's nearly 80. I just got no interest in it and I get really frustrated easily with it. And with phones, I often feel that actually, if you said to me, would you rather the internet hadn't been existed and phones hadn't been invented? I would say yes, overall. Would you?
Yeah. I just feel like I think I've only come to that in about the past 2 years, but I'm just done with it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's like social media, everything, the way it occupies my brain, the way I'll go on Twitter and sort of scroll through stuff and I'm like, what am I doing? I could be reading a book. I could be leaving a voice note for someone. But I have to say, with Josie, I am so glad that phones have been invented because I think that is the way that she likes communicating the best. And we do write each other postcards and letters and she's just about the only person I write to now. But she uses a phone very well and she came off social media recently and she came off Twitter for about a month. So it's not that she's on her phone all the time. I think she likes to communicate with voice notes and I think that's her.
I mean, they're getting a renaissance here in...
I know. I mean, I've said that I don't like them and now I'm like, voice notes are the best. I've told people how to hold the button down.
I mean, you're basically the representative. The constituency you hold is the voice notes constituency. I mean, it's a shock to us all.
Me included, but, you know...
And so are they long voice notes that you and Josie leave each other?
Yeah, I mean, I'll look on my phone now. I think they are. Yeah, they are quite long. We call each other snuggles and wuzzles, which is quite... I mean, I'm wuzzles and she's snuggles. I mean, what is that? That's like... I mean, is that really gross?
There are no jokes between female friends, in my view. Don't hold up to scrutiny external from the group is my experience. And I sometimes try and like replay some of the entertaining things that have been said in my girlfriend's WhatsApp group. And it just doesn't translate, but it is the funniest thing in the world while it's happening.
I know, it is. It is. Yeah, it should be a what stays in the group. I've just told everyone our pet names for each other, but I don't care. So they're about 2 minutes. She left me one that was 2 minutes exactly. I replied with one which was 2 minutes 31. So I've replied with one that's longer.
She should never have got you that button trick. Do you think she knows how much you mean to her? She must do.
I think she does. But then I think sometimes you assume, don't you? And I think when life gets a bit more complicated as you get older, like in our 20s, we were just together so much because we did a lot of shows together. And then I supported her on tour and we were always doing Edinburgh and we lived near each other at one point. And maybe it's more clear then how much you mean to each other. I'm assuming that I mean a lot to her as well, how much you mean to each other. But I think I do. Through your actions, because you can show each other how much you mean to each other. You can like... you know, do stuff for each other and be caring and be compassionate and stuff. And then I think as you get older, and I think actually what happens is you get older and you can't see people as much, either because you've got a family or just because you get into a routine where you're working more or you're like, actually, I'm going to stay in and watch Strictly tonight. I'm not going to the pub kind of thing. I wonder if, because I'm speaking generally here, but I think it does happen to a lot of people, especially women, that you see, because you see your friends less, you perhaps overcompensate by being like, I put so many exclamation marks and kisses in messages compared to how I just used to be like, yep. I wouldn't even put a full stop. And I think now, because I don't really see people, I want to kind of demonstrate. I'm like, oh, I love you and blah, blah, blah. And it kind of feels maybe slightly like, I don't know, like unnecessary. But it's like I'm trying to tell them.
It's a bit like having Botox, isn't it? Where you have to express your feelings with your words.
Yeah.
So,
yes, exactly.
So, yes. I am angry now.
Yes, so true, because I can't see you and show you. You know, you can't have that heart-to-heart, I can't anymore, where you get drunk together and you're in the pub and you're there for 4 hours and then I just can't, because the kids are getting up at 5 a.m. or, you know, Ellis is on tour.
Also, I don't really want to anymore. I think you just do grow out of it a little bit, of just like endless, like sort of teary emotional moments.
Do you go on hen nights now? Where if I go on hen nights now, I'm like, oh, this is a familiar feeling. Then I go, this is the feeling that I used to have all the time, that I'm with, like, I'm in a big group and we're going out, we're drinking. The whole night is ahead of us. There's no kind of like got to get back in 2 hours type thing. And sometimes there are big emotional revelations and I'm like exhausted afterwards, whether they're from me or them.
I know, it's tiring. Tiring. To be fair, I don't really get invited on hen nights anymore. All my friends are either divorced or already married. Haven't been on a hen night for some time. I'm now like the old woman who like employs yet loads of young women, and when they're getting married, they're like, well, I wouldn't invite my boss. Like, I'd be the nam at the hen. Oh, I always found older women on a hen do were always the wildest in my experience.
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe you'd get invited for like the afternoon tea bit. Then they'd be like, we're going on to a club, Jess.
When did that start that we had to do pottery on a fucking hen do?
That's so, oh my God, no, don't. I know. Or you go on a boat. You go on pottery.
What the hell? Like, so twee.
The whole thing is like it's so, 2 weeks
it's so
long.
Gender specific, though, isn't it? Like, women are doing like pottery and making pom-poms and doing crafts, and men have to go out and do like paintballing. So like, it seems maybe it's that doesn't happen anymore. Also, I'm going to say baby showers, down with that sort of thing. I never had baby showers when I had my babies, and that certainly didn't exist. And now I get frequently like invited to baby showers.
Well, the only one I've ever been invited to is Josie's, and I was like, what is a baby shower? Well, you have to bring stuff for the baby, like, and I didn't know. I was like, what? I thought it might, I understood that it was like a collection of people before, and that was what it was before the baby's born, but I don't think I understood, like, I don't know, the ceremonial aspect of it. It feels quite kind of, you know, we're giving the presents, and it's quite, in some ways, it's more formal than I thought.
Have you ever been to a gender reveal party? I suspect this is something that only exists on the internet.
Okay, so I have been to one, but by accident.
Oh my gosh, you have been to all the events.
I just do it everything once. So this one was by accident, though. We went to, in, you know, remember when you could see people in lockdown for a bit, like outside?
In the middle bit. Yeah.
So where near my mum and my partner is like a stately home. And we went to meet her and her partner with my partner and my kids. So we're all outside and I said, shall we go into the stately home gardens? And mum was like, why don't we just sit out here? And I was like, yeah, actually, the kids will just trample on all the flowers and stuff. So we sat on the grass next to this car park, but it was actually really lovely. We had a picnic and the kids were just obsessed with this one tree. Fine. Then suddenly we heard a cacophony of popping and we were like, what's that noise? It was like really loud popping. And we turned round and there were approximately 200 blue and pink balloons being blown, because it was very windy, towards a bed of stinging nettles. And as they hit the nettles, they were popping. And it was, we were like, what's going on? So my daughter loves balloons. She was like, I'll go and help them try and get... So she ran over and it was a gender reveal party. And they were trying to set up... it was so ambitious. They were trying to set up like a frame, an actual like metal frame in this like patch of grass next to the car park with, I'm not joking, approximately 200 blue and pink balloons that were presumably there as part of the gender reveal, and then they were going to, I don't know, reveal the gender of the baby. But Because
like, of, let the blue ones
yeah,
go.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, but I don't think they were... I think all the balloons had just blown off this archway that they were trying to secure them to. So they were like, oh, the balloons, the balloons. It was absolute mayhem and they were all popping. It was... And you wouldn't have thought necessarily that balloons would pop when they hit stinging nettles.
No, I wouldn't have thought.
No, but maybe it was thorns or something that was... I mean, I like to think the balloons were getting stung and popping, but yeah, so I went... I feel like I went to that gender reveal party.
This, what you are describing, is the reason why I think we should get rid of the internet. This is a perfect example of, like... And like they were trying to make some sort of exciting video.
Yes.
For Instagram. 100%. And this is just like, that would never have existed before we had to eat amazing looking dinners.
You're absolutely right. It wouldn't...
Marketing in our actual lives. We are all marketing in our actual lives. And that is... I blame the internet for this stinging nettle. That is a great story, though, for have you ever been to a gender reveal? That is a great anecdote.
Well, they certainly weren't filming the stinging nettles business. They were up in arms. They were like, what?
Now, that is a video I would
know,
watch.
Exactly. And my mum was so confused. We went and talked to them. They were American. I wonder if it's bigger in America, actually. And they were like, yeah.
I think it only exists on the internet.
Yeah, I've never seen anything in this country like that before.
Okay, so Josie didn't have a gender reveal
Josie
party.
Josie didn't have a gender reveal party.
With 200 balloons.
No, she didn't. We just got her the baby a dress and had a nice cup of tea, yeah.
Do you worry about like not your children not growing up together?
Yeah, I don't know if you have this as well, but before I had kids and when I was pregnant with my daughter who was first, I sort of envisaged myself meeting up with all my mates and our kids, or almost like a commune, like our kids. And then actually the reality of it often isn't like that, is it? Anyway, but...
I'm afraid to say in my life, it is like that, but that is because, and it's the reason you also speak to Josie more, now she lives in Glasgow, it's because you live in London. It is different. My friends, I live three streets from where I was born and my friends all live within three streets of me. And we brought our children up together. I just went on holiday recently to Turkey and I was with 16 people, Brummies, and all of our kids going on holiday together. Like that is how, you know, there isn't a... I mean, my kids are out at the moment and my husband at a thing on our local high street with all of the other people. So there'll be like 30 of them all there with their kids running around. So we do actually live a bit like that. We are a bit of a commune and we all plan to live in an old people's home together as well.
Wow. I just want to move back to Matlock now.
Yeah. See, you know, if you were in Matlock, which is lovely, by the way.
It is lovely. It is. My best mates moved back. But she lives in the middle of nowhere and I wouldn't want to do that. But I still think I'd do the 10-minute drive to her house if I lived in the centre. Right, I'm going to have to... But I've got to persuade Ellis to move to Matlock. That's the problem because he's Welsh. OK.
All right, OK. Well, Welsh, I mean, this would work in either place, Matlock. Or like, your house that you live in now, right, in London, you're going to be able to buy a stately home.
Don't, because we're about to move house and I keep looking at Matlock houses and I'm like, what am I doing? What are we doing? Take what off. Do you do, though, if your kids... ever argue? Like, do your kids ever come in and go, so-and-so's just, or do they just...
All the time!
Does it just not matter?
All the time. All the time. I mean, my children and my mates' children fall out all the time. I've been looking after all of my mates' kids and they've like, you know, they've had a row and that kid's gone off on his bike and I don't know where he's gone and I've had to his parents and say, such is the arguments in my house. I've not actually managed to supervise your children. Oh no, that happens all the time, but we shout at each other's children.
So I suppose as long as that's the understanding, you shout at them as if they're your own children.
Yeah. So if my child can, I mean, mostly we're like, oh, sort it out yourself. Otherwise, yeah, we would be like, you know, if one of my mate's kids was being horrible and mean in front of me, I would shout at them and my friends would not have a problem with that. It's not like that slap program or that book, slap or whatever it's called. It's not like that. They'd just be like, too right, listen to Jess. They fall out like brothers and sisters.
Yes, I was going to say it's probably like more of a sibling relationship.
Yeah, it's much more like a sibling relationship. They fall out like that. So, you know, get back to Matlock and you're a bit closer to Glasgow then.
I know that is very true, actually.
So how would you sign off your letter to Josie?
I'd say, even though we don't live near each other anymore, our friendship hasn't changed. If anything, it's got stronger. We never bother with pleasantries, and you're one of the very few people I like getting voice notes from. I love sending you postcards and will continue to do so forever. That's quite a promise, actually, isn't it? But I do mean it. You're always there to listen and never judge, but can gently point out another view when it'll help me. You're one of the kindest people I know, and it's an honour to be your friend.
Oh.
Very serious.
She is a very nice woman. She seems cheerful.
She's got a lot of joie de vivre.
Oh, that's a good word. Joie de vivre. So, the second letter I've asked you to write is a letter to somebody who is no longer around. So, who would that be?
So, this person is with us, but she lives near Matlock, so I don't ever see her, really. I saw her recently when I went up to sign copies of my book in the bookshop in which I haven't tried to shoehorn in at all. I genuinely haven't.
You should do that. So it's called Jane is Trying,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's called Jane is Trying, and it's set in the Peak District.
And you went to sign copies of it in Matlock.
I went to sign copies of it in a lovely bookshop near Matlock in Cromford called Scarthing Books, which is an incredible bookshop. And she came there, and I'd not seen her for perhaps even a decade. And I know that I might now not see her for a really long time. So the reason I chose her name's Sue.
You are brilliant at talking about people and then not mentioning their name.
Yeah. It's like a big reveal. An hour later, yeah. And please, welcome to the stage. Yeah. Yeah, the balloons popping on the nettles. Her name's Sue Stones. When I was very young, I started to go to youth theatre in Bakewell. And I really wanted to be an actress. And I really lacked confidence and felt like a bit of a misfit. And I think probably the best people do. The best people like me. But what I mean is, as I get older, I think it's no bad thing to feel like a misfit. And it's no bad thing to not know who you are and stuff when you're growing up. And I'm now a bit suspicious of people who are like, I'm sorted, I know exactly what I'm doing kind of thing. But you can feel quite alone in that, can't you, when you're young? I remember the first time my mum and dad took me to Bakewell Youth Theatre and I just wouldn't get out of the car. I was like, I'm not going in. The reason I've chosen her, and the reason she still has an impact on me, and I don't want to talk in generalities, because I think with anything, it's easy to sort of, and even with Josie's letter, I felt like, you know, you're always there to listen and never judge. But I really, really meant that about her. So I want to be specific about Sue as well. She's really, really principled, and she really lets her principles inform her actions. And what I mean by that is everyone's equal. She's so authentic, and she never... So, for example, if we were doing a show, we did lots of different shows, like, say, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat and stuff, you'd have the leads there. And I was never a lead in youth theatre. I was sort of... No, I was never Joseph. I applied to be... what's the female version of Joseph? Josie. Josie and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. It needs to be done. And actually, to be honest, that play is not great for women. You're either a sheep or a wife.
No, I was about to say, I can't remember any...
It's all brothers.
It's brothers and pharaohs and things like that. Yeah.
It's that a classic thing where the wife kind of comes in and it literally could be played by anyone, whereas the men have got very specific traits. But anyway, so perhaps that's not the best example. But basically, whatever play we did, it didn't matter whether you were in the last row and you had no lines and you were just coming in to do a few songs, or if you were the lead. It was like everyone was equal in it and everyone was part of the same process. And she made us work hard, you know. And I remember, and she also used to direct the musicals at school. So I did a little Shop of Horrors and Grease and stuff like that at school.
They've got good women characters in.
They have, especially Little Shop.
Yeah, Audrey.
And I was Audrey in that. So I think I got my confidence from youth theatre, and then I was older then as well. But it's really, really all to do with her. And she believed in me, and she helped me with my speeches for drama school auditions. But she's never, ever, like, there's no bullshit. She's never like, you're going to be a star kind of thing. It's just like, you've got to work really hard, and this is what I think, and this is what I need you to do to improve it if you want to do that. And she just treated us all like adults. And yeah, I don't think she realises how many people she's affected, because obviously not everyone who went to youth theatre has gone into acting or directing or whatever. But I really think that people have carried her passion for performance into their lives and their jobs. Yeah.
Must be the reason that she did it, though. You know, like people often say, I'm not sure that people realise, because people aren't being arseholes about it, basically. They're not going around saying, I'm the big I am, I change people's lives, man. But getting up in the morning and doing something that is largely voluntary and probably or not paid well, and just doing it with to the best of your ability, is almost certainly because you are inspired by the thing that you can possibly change. Otherwise, I'm really not sure why anybody would do anything.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And she must have got a real buzz when she saw people. So maybe underneath she does know. But I wouldn't be surprised if she didn't realise the extent of it. I wouldn't be surprised if she thought once people have left, they've left youth theatre, that's it, they've gone on to uni or whatever. But
and they've forgotten about me.
Yeah, or like that's I was a part of their lives then, and then they've. But whenever I meet up with people from youth theatre, all we do is talk about her, because she's a very unusual person, I think.
Yeah, I mean, she sounds brilliant. I like people who are no bullshit. That's a big tick.
She's a very strong person. She's always herself, and that sounds it. You know, it's hard to do, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And most people aren't, you know, that whole I've got to be true to myself sort of, no, again.
Well, that's why Instagram's.
Yeah.
Got to be true to myself.
True to myself. What a load of bullshit.
If I don't have 200 balloons at the gender reveal, I'm not being true to myself.
Like the idea that you have to, you know, always be yourself, and actually maintaining that would be really, really, really hard, because, you know, you have to channel shift all the time depending on what sort of environment you're in. And so people who, that's why authenticity is very, very, it's like a thing people crave, because you feel like that person is actually as they are with you, that is how they are. But yeah, it's hard to maintain that, I think, actually, and be yourself, especially because people have difficult lives. I should imagine Sue at times was coming and being really good for all of you and was having a tricky time.
Yeah, we do. And it's easy when you're young, isn't it, to look upon all grown-ups as not having any personal problems, or, you know, not even having problems like the kitchen's flooded. You know, you just think of them as grown-up.
I had no concept until I think I had children. I mean, I had them quite young, so maybe I caught on. I just didn't know.
I know. I remember this really key moment where my dad passed away 10 years ago. And I'm sorry, I feel bad. Sorry, Dad, that I haven't chosen you for my... I chose Sue, but I've said enough to you. I remember this really key moment when he was ill, and me and Mum were in, like, I don't know, I think we were in Little Chef somewhere near Matlock. And I suddenly realised that... I knew the story of how they'd met. I knew they'd met on a skiing holiday, and I knew how they got together and stuff and where they were living and all that. Facts, you know, just facts. I'd never really thought about the fact that my mum and dad, that they were living, breathing humans who'd had relationships before each other and had met by chance. And I sort of had this moment where I thought, Mum was just like me. And then she met Dad and they had me. And it was sort of blew my mind, because I think the other thing is, when you realise that you being created is utter chance, it's quite hard to stomach. You're like, oh my God, I could so easily not have been born. Like,
it's just totally existential. Like, when you actually think, there's so many like variables where you don't exist, more so than, is it entropy? That's got, like, there's so many like variables where you don't exist. There's only one where you do, like where that happened. Mental.
It's, I know, it is.
Don't think about it for too long. It makes your brain hurt. But they were people like you, and they still, to me though, especially when one of your parents dies, my mum died about 11 years ago, and they become like a different thing in your head. Like grown-ups, I'm still a kid to my mum. Like, you don't refer to your children ever as being your adults, do you? Even though that's what they are. There's still, like, she knows more than me, and I would never be able to be as good as being a mum as her. It, you know, not that I'm beating myself up, I'm a perfectly good mum, but...
Yeah, but you still put her... You still have that dynamic.
It's like it gets slow. But if that were true, over the generations... Eventually, someone's having a really bad, you know, like, everybody's going to have a terrible mother, because it can't be true, can it? And my children will think that way about me.
But there's something scary about going, now I've got kids, and I'll sometimes disagree with Mum about a thing to do with the kids. And I find that quite frightening, because I'd prefer her to always be right, even if it means that I'm in danger of getting bollocked. I don't like it when you have to step out onto the precipice and go, maybe I'm right and she's wrong. But if I'm right and she's wrong about that, what else am I? It's just like, it's
unraveling now. This is unraveling. I don't know what I think about anything. Everything is wrong if she's wrong.
I know. It's like, no. She's infallible. It's weird. And I think that is what, and I don't know how, if your mum was poorly or not, but...
She had cancer.
Yeah, my dad had cancer as well. And I think it's really tricky seeing someone who, I found it hard, seeing someone who'd always been, I suppose, you know, just in that role of dad, and I hadn't really, although he had a stroke in his 50s, I generally hadn't really worried about his health. And then suddenly seeing him so frail and stuff, I think that can be really tricky, can't it? Because you're like, another reminder that they're human. And then obviously the whole process of losing someone and grieving. But I think, so I think for a while I could only think of him in hospital and being really ill. And they look very different, don't they, when they're ill? And it's just, and then I think as time's gone on, and I don't know if you've found this too, I've been able to kind of have a more rounded view of dad. And, but yeah, it does. It must be to do with your brain. I feel like in some ways...
Protection. Yeah, there's all sorts of different things that you'll do, put in the way to protect yourself, whatever. And some of that is, you know, difficult and harmful. And actually, we should try to get rid of those sorts of protections. But mostly, it's a good thing.
I think so. Yeah. It's really easy to chastise yourself and go, oh, I should accept that. I felt like Dad was going to come back for years. I felt like he was just hiding and he was going to come back.
Me too, all the time.
On myself, did you?
I really kept thinking, I remember one time like being in her house and opening the downstairs toilet and shouting for her to bring me toilet roll. And she'd been dead about a year. And I was like, what is wrong with you? Like, yeah, I thought, and certainly when somebody dies very suddenly as well. So when Joe died, I just didn't believe it. For ages, I just was like, this is wrong. Like, you know, I've read things in the newspaper that are wrong before. Like, this is wrong. Like, this is just, this can't be true.
You can't, I know, a friend of mine suddenly died a couple of years ago and someone told me and I said, oh, it just can't be true because I saw him on Tuesday. And that was I was like, it can't be.
Well, that's exactly my reaction to Jo because I had left her house like 12 hours before. And I was like, she can't be dead. No, no, you've misunderstood. She was literally stood next to me less than 24 hours ago. Don't be ridiculous. She can't be dead. People who were stood by me recently can't be dead. Like, what a ridiculous thing to think.
I know, but it's just shock, isn't it? It's your brain's way of giving you time to accept it, I think.
Yeah, I think it must be.
But I think we have to be really kind to ourselves in those moments. I think I was sometimes really hard on myself, be like, come on, Izzy, you know, he's dead, you've been to the funeral. And it's like, actually, it's really hard. Like, give yourself a bit of time. And yeah.
Yeah, give yourself a break. Conversely, I think that people are worried when they don't feel as much as they thought that they were going to feel. And I think that's terrible when people give themselves a hard time about that as well. Whatever I say to people, whenever I meet a lot of people who are very, who are bereaved or had terrible times, obviously, at my job, and often very extreme bad things are the things that cross my path. I learned that, you know, I hated people saying sort of everything happens for a reason, platitudes and things like that to me. And so, and oh, your mom's in a better place. And I was thinking, what, where's better than here with me? Like what? She would definitely think this with her grandchildren would be the best place to be, actually, if you don't mind.
When people say stuff like that, I think it feels like a rejection of the person who's bereaved. It's not meant like that at all, but...
Yeah, they don't mean it, like, nastily, but it definitely, that's the way it feels. It's just like, oh, no, actually, she's not on a star. Somebody said that to my son, and he was, like, 4, and he said, well, why wouldn't she come back and see us if she was on a star? But, which is a good question. I was like, she just doesn't like you, you know. but she always preferred the other one. I didn't say that. But like what I say to people now is feel whatever you feel and know that that's okay. Because it's not about anybody else's view on the situation. It is about them. So how would you sign off your letter to Sue?
So I would say you're someone who never seeks out attention. So it's good to be able to tell you what an impact you've had on my life and career. Your fairness and your principles and your hard work have stayed with me. And I always remember you shouting, react, react, when we were in the choruses of plays. That was to try and make... She used to get really annoyed when people just sit on the back row and just look at... She'd be like, you're on the stage as well, just because you're not talking. You give everyone equal attention and you have such a passion for the arts that you may be unaware of quite how many lives you've enhanced. Thank you.
We'll be back for Izzy's final letter after a short break.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So your third letter is somebody who doesn't know what effect they've had on your life. So who would that be to?
So that's to Michael J. Fox.
An amazing choice.
I did think when I looked at the three, I was like, do you know what? I feel quite happy that I've got a real, you know, three.
A range.
Yeah, a real range of people here. So I hadn't even really ever thought much about Michael J. Fox. I enjoyed Back to the Future and stuff, as we all did, I'm sure.
You're only human.
Yeah. And then I got like this chronic condition that no one could diagnose. I was getting severe dizziness and headaches for months to the point where I couldn't really work. And I'd sort of go to Sainsbury's and have to cling to shelves, and I'd go to A&E and they'd sort of go, we can't really help you. I went to the GP and they couldn't. And then I went to someone who said I had something that I didn't end up having, and I just felt really ill most of the time. I'm not comparing what I had to Parkinson's in any way. What I'm saying was I was in quite a difficult place, really, because I felt like people were kind of fobbing me off, and I was like, I'm never going to get better, and I can't work properly, and I couldn't drive and stuff. I ended up trying to look for stuff that, I suppose, any pieces of writing that gave me hope in any way, and I didn't care what they were, because I did actually Google at one point, like, messages of hope or something, and I didn't really felt like I connect with any of them. You know, I got like 100 things like, you'll get through it, and I was like, these don't feel specific. They just feel kind of like these general, like, almost computer-generated things. And then I started to read books, some books by people who had various types of illnesses and had got through them, and other books by, yeah, like, I guess, generally, books from people who had encountered something difficult and unexpected and had come out the other side. And it's not necessarily that they're better, but it's that they've shown compassion towards themselves and kind of come to another place from where they were. So I read his book called Lucky Man, and it just had this massive effect on me. And it was to do with the point at which I was reading it where I couldn't work. I just felt like no one knows that I feel this ill because it's invisible, you know. I just used to get in the bath and read, and I read it, and it's about how he got diagnosed with Parkinson's, and it's about like how he coped with the diagnosis, I suppose, and how he was in denial, and how all the different things he's come up against, and how it's affected.
Wasn't
every
he 29 or
he
something,
was really like... yeah, he was really, yeah, really young. I'm not sure of the exact age, but he was young. And so
I was at dinner with Hadley Freeman the other day, and she'd interviewed him recently, and I think it was, she said, I think it was he was 29 or something. Yeah,
well, because he was so young, they, which she probably said, like, they were, they just said, oh, you won't have Parkinson's. It won't be anything. It'll just be... They were sort of saying, I think, that he had something really kind of superficial that would go away for ages, that, you know, that obviously turned out to be something that wasn't that. What I love about the book is that he makes himself really vulnerable in the writing. And it's really funny as well. A member of my family's got Parkinson's now, so it's helped me on a lot of levels. It's helped me to understand the nature of it, because I think a lot of people think it's just about, like, your hand shaking, and it's obviously so much more complex than that. And also, he's done so much to raise awareness of Parkinson's and to raise money for research and treatment. But the thing that I just really loved more than anything about it was how personal it felt and how vulnerable he made himself in the writing. And it just really felt like the right book at the right time for me. And I used to think about him if I was having a really bad day. And obviously, as I say, what I had isn't anything like Parkinson's.
What is it? What was wrong with you in the end?
It was called migraine-associated vertigo. And in the end, I found a specialist.
There's nothing worse than vertigo. It's the worst thing in the whole world.
Yeah, it was hard. I'd never had migraines in my life.
My dad suffers from vertigo and Meniere's disease. You know, like when people say, I don't like heights, and like my dad genuinely doesn't like the edges of things, like even just like a curb or anything, because it's literally like the floor is meeting him. And us, the kids, like the edge police, we used to call him. That feeling when you're drunk and you're trying to go to sleep, like, people live with that all the time. Like, that is horrible.
It's hard. And I think any invisible illness is... Well, I've got an inflammatory joint disease as well, but actually now is a lot better than it used to be in my 20s. It hardly bothers me at all now, but I used to get really bad sciatica and stuff in my 20s. Actually, people can see it. If you've got a bad back, you can see it crooked, and I won't be able to walk properly, and I'll be, you know, limping, and I'll say, I've got sciatica. You could walk down the street, you could say to someone, oh, I've got sciatica, they'd probably have heard of it and know. But I think sometimes when you're hiding, you feel like you're hiding something away, and it felt like a mysterious thing, and I felt like I wasn't believed by some people. And I came across this article by accident, and I went for dinner at my sister-in-law's lunch, and they were all having lunch, and I just couldn't eat. I had such a bad headache, the room was spinning, and I said, I'm gonna have to lie in your bed. And I went and lay in their bed, and I just went on Google, and I kept Googling my symptoms, and then I found a Daily Mail article. I don't really read the Daily Mail.
I mean, you didn't, send your letter to Paul Dacre at the Daily Mail. It's not Paul Dacre anymore, is it? Somebody else. Imagine Michael J. Fox. Actually, it was the Daily Mail saved my life, said almost no one ever.
No, but they did introduce me to this specialist, and I'm not, I mean, you can cut out which paper it was if you want, but I found this newspaper article. Yeah.
No, don't. I like it. I mean, honestly, sometimes they're absolutely bang on right at the moment. They're doing a cracking job of uncovering the government's problems, so they can keep on going.
Well, I think sometimes their health pages.
Yeah, no, I think you're right.
They often name the consultant.
And also, they're really good on consumer stuff. They like, you know, they care about their readers. Whether your bias agrees with that or not, the Daily Mail is more led by its readers than I think any other newspaper.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. They had a long interview with this woman who had exactly the same symptoms as me, and they will name the consultant, and they will name the hospital where the consultant works, because they do such a long feature. And I found this interview, and I was like, That's me. It was like the first time that I'd found, because there are all these other things when you're getting diagnosed with, is it an inner ear problem? Because I had a bit of tinnitus as well, which muddied the waters, because actually what the tinnitus was just a red herring in the end. And I was like, I felt like a shiver go down my spine. I was like, that's me. So then I made a note of the guy, and I sought him out, and I went to see him, and he was the one who got me completely better. It's completely gone.
Completely
gone. But it took months. Yeah.
Oh God, it took ages. Yeah. You have to have Botox is a treatment, so you know, can double up.
No, yeah, I can double up. Yeah, I've got the pain in the wrinkles
Botox
around my
treatment.
Eyes, guys.
Yeah, that's it. I need a tummy tuck for my migraines.
Can you do my bum just while I'm under?
So, well, that's good that you feel better. It's horrible. I come across people with all sorts like diseases, like fibromyalgia. The classic example is ME.
Well, dizziness, I think, can be due to so many different things. Can't it? I think it can be quite hard for GPs to... But the first thing he asked me is the nature of the dizziness, and he was so specific, because there are so many different types of dizziness, and perhaps what your dad's got is probably different from what I had. Because I always felt like if I turned my head, it was like the room took a second to catch up.
Oh, my God. It sounds harrowing to me. Yeah. I can't go on a swing because it makes me feel sick.
Oh, I'm still funny with lifts. That's the only residual... not even a symptom, but the only residue of it. And I have to be a bit careful. I'm not supposed to eat blue cheese and stuff, but I sometimes have a bit and test the waters. But the diet that he put me on was really strict initially. But with a lift, for about 10 seconds after I get out of a lift, I feel like I'm still in the lift. So I'm walking along and it's like, I feel like the ground is going to give way, because it's like I'm still going up or going down. But then it goes.
Right then, so how would you sign off your letter to Michael J. Fox?
I would say, I doubt I'll ever meet you, but I expect I'm one of many when I say that your writing has given me strength and resilience. This is because you make yourself so honest and vulnerable. The work you do to raise awareness of Parkinson's is incredible. Thank you for making the choice to share your whole story and to help others in such an open-hearted way.
So, we've got a letter to Josie Long, one to Sue Stones, and one to Marty McFly. Did any of them surprise you at I didn't think I'd pick that person, but I actually did?
With the one who's no longer here, yeah, I think I was maybe a bit surprised about picking Sue, only because she is here. You know what I mean? I was initially thought of my
She's
dad.
She's not in then, your life.
Yeah. And my Auntie Margaret, who passed away in COVID, who was actually my dad's cousin's auntie or something, but she was like his auntie. And then there's so many people, aren't there? I felt like I kind of said private stuff to Dad and Auntie Margaret, whereas I felt like it was an opportunity to kind of talk about Sue. So, yeah.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
It's lovely. And I hope Sue listens. You'll have to send it to Sue. We'll have to find it. Have you got her contact details?
Yeah.
There you go, you can send it to Sue. Well, hello, Sue. Lovely to hear about you. You sound ace. And by all accounts, you're looking great. Well, Izzy, thank you so much for telling us about the brilliant people in your life. It's been lovely to talk to you. And the best gender reveal anecdote that I think I'm ever going to hear in my whole life.
I've really enjoyed it. Thank you for having me.
Totally my pleasure. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Yours Sincerely with Jess Phillips. If you want to hear more conversations just like this, make sure you follow Yours Sincerely with Jess Phillips on the podcast provider of your choice. And why not write a letter to your friends, telling them all about this podcast? And you can also follow us on social media. We're at Jess Phillips Pod. Goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.